The flux is coming. The flux is coming. And so are a lot of dangerous Doctor Who villains. So keep your eyes wide open and join us to talk about the Halloween apocalypse, all coming up on this edition of your Don't Blink podcast from Golden Spiral Media.
This is your Don't Blink podcast, a fan podcast devoted to the BBC series known as Doctor Who. Sharing thoughts, theories, and listener feedback are your hosts, Wayne Henderson and Jada Wilkerson.
It's so good to be back for another Don't Blink Doctor Who podcast episode. I'm Jada Wilkerson, Whovian, comics enthusiast, and I just want to rub Carvanista's shaggy big head.
And me, I'm Wayne Henderson from MediaVoiceovers.com, and I've got a sudden craving for dog biscuits. So, with that being said, on this episode of the Don't Blink podcast, we're going to discuss the Season 13 premiere, which kicks off the Flux storyline, the Halloween Apocalypse.
And we share your great feedback received at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. Great to finally have a new season of Doctor Who to talk with you about. Let's start with some of our favorite parts from Flux, Chapter 1, the Halloween Apocalypse. I think my favorite part of this whole thing has to be the Division references. Because for some reason, the idea of the Division really got a hold of me last season, and I was overjoyed to see that they're bringing it back.
Yeah, that is actually good to see, because at first glance, I was worried that maybe some of the events from last season would be kind of just overlooked and written over, but I think canon is canon, although that changes all the time in the Whoverse. I do have a question for you, Jada. Did that introduction scene at the very, very beginning, did that remind you or remind anybody else of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the original BBC production?
Yeah, I can see what you're saying totally. It had a very Douglas Adams feel to it.
It definitely did. It's almost like he, from back in the day when he was doing a little bit of writing for Doctor Who. And then after whatever that pole thing was that the Doctor and Yaz were hanging off of, when it broke in two and they're both hanging onto their own, I kind of got a Quidditch vibe from Harry Potter.
Oh, yeah, I was just waiting for the reference. I just knew that they were going to say something. I mean, they were on flying brooms practically. But nope, they didn't say anything, but it was a very wild and bombastic opening scene. I enjoyed it greatly, especially the part with them just letting go and kind of falling into the TARDIS while trying to get the handcuffs released.
Yeah, it was a great way to just kick off the season. We've got a lot of action, kind of like what they do in the James Bond movies. Show a lot of action and this, that, and the other, and then some music, and then we get into it. We're in Liverpool 1820. Something mysterious is going on. It looks like they're doing some mining. And what are they creating in those tunnels, Jada? One of the guys there in the 1820s said that it's cataclysmic and quote-unquote impossible. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, what's interesting is I think I heard someone say that this was an actual event. In the 1820s, someone actually did a significant amount of tunneling, and they don't know what they were doing or what they were looking for, and it's been a mystery ever since. What's more perfect for Doctor Who, an unsolved mystery back in time that we can just put the Doctor in and just make up anything because it won't, you know, matter because we have no idea what happened. I think it's great. I love the idea. And it was very mysterious. I like how mysterious it was and how they didn't give us everything, not even a hint of everything that's going to happen. After all, we know that this is one long story, much like much of classic Doctor Who, where it was several episodes that made up a story. This is going to be great, I think. It's got me excited.
So you're saying that something really did happen in Liverpool around 1820, something to do with mining and digging tunnels? I hadn't heard that part of history. Interesting.
Yeah, I've got to do more research looking up, but I definitely want to see. Maybe we'll have some updates next week, but I definitely want to see what matches with the story that they're trying to tell. It's going to be interesting.
And then all of a sudden, we're in Liverpool, but in modern day. I thought we might stop off in 1962 and see the Beatles for a minute, but we're right into modern day. And We got a new companion or fam member.
Yeah, Dan. He seems to be a character. He's pretending to be a museum guy.
Now, why would somebody do that? It just because they love the history so much, they're going to pretend to work there?
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. Yeah, that you really got to love a place or really feel the spirit of a place to want to just guide people through its history just because. It's not even his job. He's pretending.
Or do you think it might have something to do with trying to remain in close proximity to that lady that he kind of had eyes for?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that was part of it. They had something good going there. A little bit of chemistry, obviously, and classic Doctor Who fashion. We see where that goes.
Yeah. The romance is kind of on hold for just a little bit. How about that prisoner? What a character.
Oh, that part I'm super excited about as well. What was his name? Swarm?
Yeah, which is a strange name if there's only one or two of them.
Yeah. But the way he just entered the Doctor's mind felt like it had flavors of the Master when they were talking telepathically. The way Swarm entered the Doctor's mind has me wondering about what Swarm could be. I think Swarm is definitely from a pre-Hartnell era of the Doctor that we just don't know about.
Well, if that's the case, we could sure use Dr. Ruth to pop back in, because she might be the one that had previous dealings with Swarm.
Yeah, I think I just think that's the way it's going to work out. And I hope so, because it will leave us after the end of this season with more to think about, more to imagine about than just the fact that we know that the Doctor had previous lives. Some concrete proof and some interesting characters for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all kind of comes together. What did you think of the very timely psychic message that Swarm sends out to the Doctor right after he escapes?
Oh, yeah, that was great. Trick or treat. Now, I'm wondering if that was just, you know, something for the audience, or if there's meaning to that later.
Oh, really? I just assumed it was a little Halloween thing by saying trick or treat, Doctor. But it might actually have meaning well beyond Halloween. I hadn't thought of that.
He has layers, but he doesn't go too deep with his layers. He keeps it kind of at the surface, but it'd be interesting to see.
And this episode really popped back and forth between different locations, different people, different characters, different times, because next thing you know, we see that Dan is getting kidnapped, so to speak, by the Carvanista guy, the cute little puppy. That guy is quite a character. I guess the actor portraying Carvanista, I think, did an excellent job, because he also very much embodied a Douglas Adams type of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy type of character, with his whole attitude about his assignment. And he's just going to do his assignment. He's not real happy about it, but, you know, that's how the universe is.
Yeah, what a great character. And I like that whole idea that his whole species, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the name of his species.
I know we have a listener brings that up in the listener feedback in just a little bit. They'll kind of break down the species name, but and what the name means behind the species. So we'll table that and let the listener help us out with that part.
Great. Well, I thought it was a wonderful little bit of writing. A whole planet of these canine creatures that begrudgingly must do their duty as man's best friend.
Yeah. That was a unique twist. And
I like it.
All of the locales, like I mentioned a while ago, next thing you know, Jada, we're in the Arctic Circle. And did this seem kind of familiar to you?
This seemed very familiar. As soon as I realized what was happening, I was just so stoked about it. Just the idea of division is intriguing to me. I don't know why. I guess, you know, Black Ops Time Lord group. That works. And they were using the same pretty much scheme that they did for the Ruth Doctor. So somehow you knew right away that one of the two of them was going to be rather important. I just didn't realize how important.
Yeah, when all of a sudden the lady there, being disguised as a human, when she gets activated, and I guess she goes to or from being Anna to Azure, back and forth, one of the two. But the way it happened, at first I thought for an instant that it was going to be another type of Ruth Doctor thing, but actually she turns out to be the sister of Swarm. And that's interesting. So they've got a long con going on here, and the Doctor's not really happy about it. And didn't she seem, the Doctor, I mean, really skittish and just flummoxed the entire episode?
Yeah, and I think rightly so. She has had on her mind for a while, obviously, because of where we start the adventure with Yaz and the Doctor confronting Carvanista, which they had obviously been doing for a while, and this, I don't think, was their first encounter. The Doctor has had the division and her unknown previous lives on her mind for a while. She's been dwelling on that for a minute, I believe. I mean, it shows in her actions, like I just said. So once she's getting to something that's a little more concrete, once she's actually talking to Carvanista, and once Swarm makes himself known, it seems that she realizes all of this is connected. All of this has to do with some of her past lives that she's unaware of. And yeah, she's just not used to that level of that understanding.
And it's interesting that the Doctor is kind of surprised that Yaz wants to know, what are you hiding from me? And I think it's pretty obvious to anybody watching, the Doctor is hiding at least 4 or 5 different things from Yaz and us, the viewers, as well. I mean, we have an idea. It has something to do with what you talked about, but also still trying to come to terms with the Timeless Children and all of that good stuff. There might even be more. And I think it's a little unfair to Yaz. She needs to give her something, because Yaz, what's she supposed to do without any background information at all? Maybe next week, right? Okay, this next scene, I think, could turn out to be the most important part of the Flux storyline, if my theory is correct. Or at least it's going to be some sort of anchor for the whole thing. Because we meet Claire. And Claire not only is a similar name to Clara, but she kind of looks like an older Clara. Even though, obviously, it's not Jenna Coleman, it's a different actress. I'm wondering, could this be a variation of the Impossible Girl? I mean, somebody could ask her if she knows how to make souffles or anything, but it was pivotal enough in the Clara era of Doctor Who, how we had, what, 2? No, actually, I think it was 3 different versions, kind of Clara. Could Claire be yet another and part of a grand finale type of thing to this era, because she, of course, comes into contact with the Weeping Angels, which, of course, great to see the Weeping Angels again. I like how at first she didn't use the phrase "don't blink." She said she mustn't blink, which I thought was very proper, a very nice way to say it. But the Weeping Angel gets her, and then am I to understand that she actually all of a sudden appears back in the 1820s? She kind of gets sent back in time?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, that part's extremely intriguing as well, because she obviously had future knowledge, and it felt very much like the scene from Blink when the Doctor and Martha get out of the taxi cab, and they've got the bow and arrow, and they're hunting some lizard with something about eggs, and Sally Sparrow, yes, comes out of the shop and says, "I know you. You haven't met me yet, but here, you'll need this." And you know, I think it was very reminiscent of that. And it's also another part of Doctor Who that I love, how they drop such twisty clues that really don't give you anything, but you know how the show goes. You can imagine, like, well, she's obviously time traveled or will time travel or something. No clues yet, because we still have, well, 5 more episodes of this story to go, but so tantalizing.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, when we last saw Clara, played by Jenna Coleman, you know, she was just going off in her own TARDIS, so to speak, just traveling the universe and so forth. But it's just interesting when you think about the Impossible Girl and the fact that those guys back in the 1820s said that whatever they're doing there is cataclysmic and impossible.
Yeah, I love the, and the guy, I'm sorry, I can't remember his name, but he also said that if he tried to explain it to the other gentleman, it would just practically blow his mind. What if Claire just took the name in honor of Clara and it is Lady Me, who kept living after maybe Clara stopped and they buried their TARDIS somewhere or something? I don't know.
Yeah, there's something there. I'm just not sure how much, but I just have a feeling it's very, very important.
Oh, yeah.
And then when we get Dan rescued from Carvanista by the Doctor and Yaz, another great callback, just something to make us smile a little bit during all the chaos, trying to do the escape and get off of the ship. When Dan finally does meet the Doctor says, "Nice to meet you, Dan. Now run for your life," which is almost exactly what the Eccleston doctor told Rose shortly after meeting her. And was I just imagining that, or did you get those vibes?
Oh, no, I definitely got those vibes. They tried to call back to so much. This episode was just packed with so much referential stuff, some, you know, Easter eggs or whatever, and so much new stuff. It was a lot. It's a lot to wrap your head around, and it's a lot to really come to terms with. But yeah, that was, it was totally a feel of the Ninth Doctor. They wrapped up. They pulled a bit of each Doctor, I think, into this.
And then we find out 30 trillion light years away. Guess who's back, Jada? Guess who's back?
You old potato heads.
What'd you think?
I love it. I love the Santarians. Their look seems to be, they've changed their look again, and it seems to be a little more retro, like they used to look. And it also was a noticeable lack of comedy, which I kind of enjoy. Although I love Dan Starkey as Strax, was that it? Strax?
Yeah, oh, Strax. Yeah, good old Strax.
I love him and his comedy. There's a darker side to the Sanitarians that we haven't seen in a while, and I think they're going to play on that, and that's going to be good.
Yeah, and although the Santarian we saw, he may not have had quite the comedy, he did have a twisted kind of wit about him. Just the way he said things like, "The greatest of times is upon us," and yet it's going to be something very foreboding indeed.
Oh, yeah, because we know they just love battle.
Yeah, and they've given us a lot of teasers. I think we see the battle is coming our way probably next week.
Oh, yes, for sure next week.
Interesting how the Doctor says that she can feel the universe breaking. You want to talk about something that's ominous.
Yeah, and it kind of makes sense. She's played in the universe's energies so much and for so long, she has to have some kind of connection to it. And with the flux, which oddly enough looks like a giant swarm of things, with the flux going on,
right?
She's bound to feel something strange, I'm sure.
I didn't think about it that way. That flux thing that's going through and destroying planets left and right is kind of like a swarm itself. So I'm wondering how much that may tie into our friend going by the name of Sworn. But the fact that he's able to scare the Doctor with his messages that he sends through space and time is pretty intense, because it says something about what, our final fight has begun. And we find out that Swarm and the Doctor have actually battled for ages, and yet we've never heard even a hint of this.
I mean, again, I've got to say it, another reason I love the show, even though we have different showrunners and different eras, a lot of it's similar. A lot of it's those main key things that run through it all that we absolutely love. And the idea that the Doctors had an adversary that might be as prolific as the Master, and we just don't know about it, is just wonderful, and I'm dying to know more.
Heck, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe at the end of the Flux storyline, the Doctor and the Master have to team up, and somehow the Master has to help the Doctor fight the good fight, or at least pretend to, because you can never really trust that person, whether they're Missy, the Master, or what have you. You just can't trust them. But a pretty strong opening to the season, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Quick question. I noticed that Swarm changed the way he looked, and it happened when he broke out of his prison.
Yes, I noticed that. I don't know if he was just in a weakened state or making himself look like he was not very well. But yeah, as soon as he escaped, all of a sudden he's like, dun da da da.
It was almost a hint of regeneration energy.
Ooh. Maybe.
At this point, anything's on the table. From they've laid it all wide open. Like, there's a whole era of possible baddie Time Lords that we could be playing with.
That would be bonkers. But like you said, everything's on the table after what they did to us last season. They teased us last season in the opener with the Master telling the Doctor that everything you think you know is a lie. And he was pretty much right. So I love it. I'm on board for anything. I mean, I would go as far as to say, because I want to leave room for even better episodes, but I'm going to give this one 8 out of 10 tiny houses that were maybe a little too tiny to actually live in.
That was great. At first I was like, tiny houses? Oh yeah, oh no, Dan's poor house.
I mean, even if Dan was shrunk down, like the Master was doing last season, shrinking people down, he'd still be too big to live in that tiny house.
Yeah, that's done. Scrap it, throw it in the bin. I thought it was excellent as well. And because I don't really believe that there's anything like a perfect story or a perfect opening or a perfect episode, I have to say that I'm probably going to give this like probably a 9 out of 10. Outposts shaped like roses.
Oh.
Because Outpost Rose was actually shaped like a rose. It took me a minute to realize that. Probably like the third watch.
So it'll be interesting to see how next week's episode goes. But for this one, I posted out a poll on Twitter where you can follow us at Doctor Who GSM, since we're on Golden Spiral Media, at Doctor Who GSM, or in our Don't Blink Facebook community group, which is easy enough to find. Just search for Don't Blink Doctor Who. You'll find us. We'll also have a link in the show notes. But the question this time is, how are you feeling after watching Doctor Who, The Halloween Apocalypse? Do you feel it was a great season premiere? Or maybe good, but my opinion is a bit in flux. See what I did there?
Yeah,
I'm still nervous about it. I just can't blink. And basically 76% of you said great season premiere. 16% are still a little bit nervous and can't blink. Don't even blink. And 8% said good, but it's a bit in flux. Now, right before we get into the listener feedback, because there's some good stuff coming your way with that, I want to remind you that there's a variety of different podcasts available to you free on demand through Golden Spiral Media. For example, there is the Entering the Fifth Dimension podcast that GSM's founder Daryl does. It's all about the Twilight Zone. There's also Made of Steel, The Blacklist Exposed for the TV show The Blacklist, and Mouse House, focusing on all sorts of good Disney park action and more. So check it out at goldenspiralmedia.com.
Well, hello, Whovians. It's Jeff X-Force 11 leaving my thoughts about the Halloween apocalypse. So I really like that we're getting an overall story arc for this season. And I am intrigued at what they're doing, bringing in all of these villains that we've known and this threat of the Flux and how is Swarm involved. And it just intrigues me. I am so glad Doctor Who is back and I am here for it. All right, those are my thoughts. X-Force is out.
All right, as usual, it's great to hear from you, Jeff. It's been a long time, and we enjoy your feedback every time. And it does look like we're getting an overall story arc for the season, just one continuous story that's going to be hopefully well-fleshed and very satisfying in the end.
That would rock, especially since, like Jeff said, these villains that we've been introduced to already. I mean, are they going to be kind of like a Justice League of villains? Probably not, but I wouldn't put it past them. They could have their code of honor, but yeah, definitely something to keep our eye on, Jeff. And thank you so much for sending in your feedback. And remember, get your feedback into us right after you watch next week's episode of Doctor Who so that you can be part of the Don't Blink podcast. Go to goldenspiralmedia.com for all the details, or even just go to don'tblinkpodcast.com.
Hey there, Wayne and Jada. Samuel Lewis from Going Through Who. That's tscn.tv/GTW. GTW for Going Through Who. We're back! We're back, baby! It's about dang time that we get to, as the Don't Blink community, join together and talk about Doctor Who and boy, what a cracker it is. So we're going to have a six-part story. This, as a classic Who fan, as I am, as it is my capacity around here to be in this wild group of people we are, feels like home to me, weirdly enough. I haven't touched a classic episode in a while because currently on Going Through Who, we are now going through the Eighth Doctor in the form of audios, and even those feel more modern era at this point. So it's nice to dip back to the multiple part story framework and to do a six parter. Pretty freaking cool for me. So again, it's kind of my job to point out some classic stuff. So here are the things that kind of pointed out to me. A Nitro 9 mention, whenever they were talking about explosions when they were hanging upside down, and the Doctor mentions, to her defense, Nitro 9 is unstable. Nitro 9 was an explosive that her companion Ace, in her seventh incarnation, you know, the little one with the hat and the umbrella, as he would call it, the seventh Doctor, was traveling with Ace, and she was an adept at making this chemical known as Nitro 9, which was very unstable, and sometimes she got the timing mechanism a bit wrong, leading to comical results. It'd still get the job done, but a bit more singeing of hairs. It's impressive that Yaz can co-pilot, by the way. There have only been several companions in the history of Doctor Who that I can think of amongst my things that can hold that distinction. There was Romana, which was a time lady herself, so of course she could help pilot a TARDIS. But then some people are going to be sour at this name. I happen to like this companion more than most people do. Adric was able to co-pilot the TARDIS a little bit as well. You could argue that Tegan also has this distinction. However, given the events of Legopolis, that was kind of a trick played on them, so you don't know if that was legitimate or not, but, you know, it's one of those things. The look of the Suntarans, yes! Okay, so nothing against the way that the Suntarans in the modern series looked. That was a neat modernization. But this new look of these Suntarans looks like classic series updated. It really does. If you look back to what the Suntarans used to look like and then look at this, it really is one of those, man, it still feels like the classic feel, but modernized instead of kind of rethinking the playbook. So these Suntarans might be a bit whiplash for people that are just used to the new series Suntarans, but for someone like me that's got the classic chops, oh yeah, it's some good stuff. Overall, my thoughts on the story, you got to form things as you go because, after all, it is a six-parter. But it's looking good so far, everyone. It's really looking good. And I am looking forward to that next one, especially considering we get to see the Santarans at war. Santar ha, baby. So let's see how they go. And let's get our new-looking Santarans out for a test drive. But also, I'll be danged if they've not set us up with multiple threads all through this that will probably all be answered within these six parts. I mean, they've set up all of our bad guys, all of our villains, all of that in one episode. It's amazing. I think there are some other things that are either rumored to be in this or have been confirmed to be in this that weren't in this episode, but they pulled a lot of them. And whenever that Weeping Angel came up, guys, the Weeping Angels are my nightmare monster. They're the ones that keep me awake at night. I knew that they scared me when I was playing Lego Dimensions with my mom for a Let's Play series, and even Lego versions of Weeping Angels scared the living bejesus out of me. So that's when I knew Weeping Angels were my ugh. And sure enough, one singular Weeping Angel made me jump out of my seat a couple of times. So all in all, I'm looking forward to seeing how all of these threads that we've set up, do they all get paid off? It's a very ambitious thing, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing how this goes. And that's my two cents for this episode. So looking forward to what everyone else has to hear, because it's been a long time, everyone. Let's celebrate that we all get to come together as a community again and comment on our favorite show. Keep it up, guys.
Awesome. So good to be back and so good to hear from you. Samuel Lewis from the Going Through Who podcast, focused on classic Doctor Who and bringing the classic knowledge right off the top, Jada, with the callback to Nitro 9. Little unstable and explosive. That's a bad combination.
Yep. that's a deep cut.
And much like you were saying earlier, he loves the look of the new Santarans, or I should say the new look of the Santarans, and looking a little bit retro. So that was good. And how about the callback and pointing out how Yaz has some more skill than she did when she was just part of the fam in the previous seasons?
Yeah. I wonder how long they've been traveling together after they've dropped off Graham and Ryan. Wow. Yeah. That just seems so long ago. And who knows? She probably had plenty of time to develop her co-piloting skills, much like Lana and Adric. I'm not a big fan of Adric. Sorry, Samuel.
Oh, my. Okay. And whenever I hear Romana's name, it reminds me of former Don't Blink co-host David Ward. May he rest in peace. Whenever Romana was ever mentioned, he'd be like, Romana. Oh, Romana. I think he had a bit of a thing for her. And how about those multiple threads? If in just the space of six episodes, and there's only five more to go, if they can tie all of these together, that would be an ambitious thing indeed, Samuel Lewis.
Very much so. And if they keep up the pacing, they'll probably be able to do it, because there was a lot in this, and I believe the next episode is like even 9 minutes longer. So I think they can do it.
And one thing's for sure, with just a six-part story season, there's no room for fluff. There's no room for clunker episodes. I won't even mention their names. Orphan 55. Excuse me. Samuel Lewis is, we find out what he's most afraid of, and it's the Weeping Angels, even if they're made out of Legos. And I can dig it, because if you're trying to go to sleep, but you know a Weeping Angel could be there, and you can't, you know, blink, you know, or even close your eyes. Yeah, that's the reason they're scary. So thanks for bringing all the classic Who knowledge and sending it all in here to the podcast. Jada, let's also check in and see what came into the email bag or the fax machine, whatever classic technology we may have on hand.
Well, it seems like we've got some mail from Ian, and reads, "Greetings. It has felt like an age since we had new Who to speak about, but this episode gave us so much to unpack. We might be talking about it for quite a while. They threw everything at us all in one go, almost overwhelming, and I think we will be referring back to this episode every week. I assume that this is sort of a Nexus episode, and each of the elements will be addressed in turn in the episodes to come. Two things I want to touch on, other than all the obvious things we saw on screen, are the two callbacks to past companions. First one is Nitro 9, the explosive used by Ace with the Seventh Doctor. The second was at least three callbacks to the opening episode of the modern era, Rose. Do those hint at a future appearance by either or both? Anyway, I look forward to hearing your thoughts on this episode and theories on what is to come. I give it a 10 out of 10 hairy space dogs. Ian.
And you can find him on Twitter at Zort70. Great email. Bringing more knowledge from the classic stuff as well. The Nitro 9, but I need more details or need to watch the episode yet again, in that I only caught the one callback to Rose. And he says there were two others. I'm feeling a bit down that I missed them, because you got to love Rose. How'd I miss it?
Yeah. And that would be great.
And the question of the week, do these callbacks hint at a future appearance by either Rose or maybe even Ace or both? Whoa, I didn't even think of that possibility. That would blow my mind in the season finale, probably.
And, you know, the season finale is going to be, I believe, the last episode before the 60th anniversary.
I'm not sure. There might be a bit more time before the 60th anniversary, but since we had to wait so long for this 6-episode season, and then it's going to be another long wait before, I think, Chibnall and Jodie Whittaker's grand finale, like some sort of special. I'm not positive, but I don't think that's going to be the 60th. I think that now that we know who the new showrunner is going to be, Russell T. Davies coming back for some more, I think he would be the one that should be handling the 60th anniversary. And I'm expecting huge things to happen.
Well, I was thinking that maybe they are setting up for a bunch of cameos or reappearances of characters or doctors coming in the specials or the final special of Chibnall's era. That would be great.
Yeah, so many things going on. So many things. So we'll have to wait and see, because we're getting pretty good at waiting thanks to the pandemic and everything else. Also got an email from Bianca. Hello, my Whovian fam. The start to the 13th series was certainly interesting and a full tilt run. A walking terrier of Lupari in Carvanista. Interesting that they're called Lupari, as lupine is usually used for wolf descriptions and canine for dogs. I had to rewind and turn on the captions to catch species bonding. That's certainly an interesting concept. For every human, there's a Lupari bound to it, which is crazy. Yeah, like you said earlier, Jada, that is an interesting concept. Weeping Angels and Claire. I don't think we've met someone who's encountered the Doctor out of sequence since Sally Sparrow in Blink. Did she know that tonight was the night she was sent back in time? She did get touched and zapped back in time, right? I didn't just imagine it, did I? Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one as well, Bianca. That's what I think happened. And we'll find out for sure. Back to her email. Vinder, the guy on Outpost Rose, I think I heard he's supposed to end up being a regular cast member. And Suntarans that really look more like potatoes that are starting to go bad and get spoiled. I mean, why even sprinkle them into the episode? Why not just save the whole reveal for episode 2? That's a good point, but I think they wanted to throw the kitchen sink at us. And they did. Let's see, back to the email. This apparent baddie, Swarm, and his sister, since the Doctor can't remember him, apparently he was part of those memories before her mind got wiped. He's kind of goofy looking. I'm sure he should have been scary, but the whole skeletal skull thing is kind of worn out. Why does it feel that the Doctor is still not being totally honest with Yaz? Why hasn't she told her at least a little bit about what she learned in The Timeless Child? Also, I was kind of surprised that the division came up again and how Carvanista is apparently a division agent? So many questions. Also, having Yaz talk to herself was pretty funny after the doctor annoyed her with her non-answer. The new guy, Dan, I'm still not sure about him. His character does seem like he'd be a good fit, but I'm still not quite sure about him overall. Also, his friend Diane. Why did Swarm's sister kidnap her? Makes no sense whatsoever. At least at this point, right? Lastly, the Flux. It's obliterating everything in its path. It looks like Swarm's disintegrating of people. I'm sure they're connected. On a side note, as I mentioned in the chat thread, which of course, Jada, you know you can find that at the Don't Blink Facebook community group. There in the chat thread for the episode, the visual of the Flux moving through space really reminds me of the ribbon of the Nexus from Star Trek Generations. My rating is affected by the jumbled, slightly rushed feeling I got while watching the episode. I'm going to give this 7.75 Lupari ship shields around the Earth. Until next time, stay safe, everyone. Bianca. Oh, great email. Thank you so much for sending that in. So many things. And yes, the division and Carvanista. And thanks for reminding us the species, the Lupari, and the background.
Lupari, yes.
Yes, I have a feeling more of them are going to be coming together in a pack or something.
I hope so. But, you know, we also have some excellent thoughts in the Don't Blink Facebook group as well. Like this from Neil and Bowie?
Yes, Neil and Bowie.
Neil and Bowie, yeah. I watched the extended version, which was not extended. The only extra things were the mini interviews. One confusing part, which may be clear upon rewatch, was the person who was blinked away. From what she said to the doctor, it sounded like she met her in the past. But then it seemed that it was the version of her who was blinked into the past. Or maybe it was a younger version. Definitely need to look at that part again. On second watch, at the point where Claire encounters the doctor and Yaz, she must have met them in her youth. They told her about what happens this Halloween and that she will meet them again after she gets sent back in time.
Oh, I like it. And Graham added, yeah, it looked like her current version that got fingered by the angel. It could be that they'll meet that version in the past and the writers have just messed up, but probably not.
Probably not. You know, and some of the other things that Graham thought were, did you all get the Thor Ragnarok vibe at the start? And what a cute doggy alien Tarvanista. He was slightly thrown off by his Liverpoolian Scouse accent. You don't expect an alien to have that accent.
I don't expect aliens to have a lot of accents, but that's why they're aliens. Graham also said that it was a very dramatic cliffhanger ending where the doctor and company are about to die. Then we get the credits and the music and a preview of next week showing that they didn't die. For heaven's sakes.
Be sure to join the Don't Blink Facebook community group and comment on the episode as you're watching it next week.
Yeah, lots of good stuff going there. And even though this week we didn't really get the true simulcast, because I guess you on the East Coast, you did get to simulcast watch the whole thing along with Britain and Europe and things like that. But for whatever reason, here out West, they still made me wait 3 more hours, but at least I didn't have to wait all the way till 8 p.m. But still, go in there. It's marked spoilery. So if you're watching it and you want to comment, go for it. We'll have a new post up for the next episode as well. Do you have anything else going on that you'd like to chat about while we're here, Jada?
Nope, I think that's about it.
All right, and for me, I also have the Packers Fan Podcast. You know, that's the show by and for fans of your 13-time NFL champion Green Bay Packers. Be sure to tune in because I think we're on our way to the Super Bowl this year. Join in on the fun at PackersFanPodcast.com and follow us on Twitter at Doctor Who GSM. Follow me on Twitter at Wayne Henderson. And Jada, are you still at Jada Wilkerson 74?
Yes, I am.
All right, follow him over there. And remember to subscribe to Don't Blink in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. That way you get the new episodes as they come out automatically. And of course, you can even listen directly on the website at don'tblinkpodcast.com.
Until next week's installment of the Flux storyline, please tell your friends all about the Don't Blink podcast, and don't blink. Don't even blink.
Mustn't blink.
Thank you for listening to Don't Blink, a Doctor Who fan podcast, part of the Golden Spiral Media podcast network of shows. I'm the Doctor in Utah, and the majestic tale of a madman in a box are used with permission from Silver Screen Records. They are composed by Murray Gold and performed by the BBC National Orchestra of Wales, conducted by Ben Foster. Taken from the original Doctor Who soundtrack, Doctor Who Series 6, available on Silver Screen Records.